This is the One Up Network. Welcome to the One Up Yours podcast for Friday, September the 15th. I'm Garnet Lee, and we have a fantastic show for you today. We got New York in the house, or from the house, or whatever. We got Luke Smith coming to you over Skype from New York, where he's been playing Wii games. Got the rest of the gang here, including a mic for Skip.
I'm back.
Very special guest, Skip Pfister.
That's outstanding. It's only is he back, he's on the mic.
I'm on a microphone. Hi.
And Shane?
I'm here. It's my day off. I came in just for this.
Wow.
That's dedication.
That's okay. John had to cancel appointments.
I did. I had to cancel two for this.
You mean that much to us, Garnet. Do you know that?
This was much more fun than they would have been, right?
Huh?
This was much more fun.
John, say yes.
Yes, absolutely. No, really. It was. I didn't want to be in one of them anyway.
Good answer. So we got the usual lineup, of course. We're going to do what you've been playing in the opening segment. John has prepped. We've got some stuff from the message boards as well.
I bet you can't imagine what people are talking about this week.
Poetry, right?
That's true. Poetry John's and poetry. Second segment, of course, is going to be the big segment. That's where Luke will join us. We'll talk all about the Wii, the announcement, the games. He's been hands-on with several titles there. You're going to get tons of info on the Wii. And then news section, John and I do our best, you know. We've got it for you. We got it covered. We have plenty to cover in the news segment. So let's dive right in. Who's been playing? You've been on deadline. Have you been playing anything?
Well, I was finishing review games, and Final Fantasy XII and I had a very tumultuous weekend of around-the-clock, no-sleep adventuring. And, eventually I got that review done, and it was pretty epic. And two of you guys have been playing it, too, and you really can't talk about it so much yet, but
I think that I'm in better place than you are, because I'm getting ready for, like, one more hands-on preview online, and I'm not rushing through it because I'm not spacing
and
that
this
deadline.
And this is one where, like, the way I usually play Final Fantasy is to get everything, and I, like, it would have taken 100 hours in this time. Like, it's kind of crazy.
Everyone just went, oh,
yeah, it's scary.
Awesome.
And remember last week I was talking about Castlevania and how much I was loving it, but I had to have it taken away from me because I wanted to play it too much, so I gave it to Mark. I'm like, Mark, you take this away from me, give it back to me in a week. So now when I fly out for TGS tomorrow, I'm going to start playing Final Fantasy 3 for DS. So it's a Final Fantasy week for me.
It's kind of apropos to be playing that on the plane to Tokyo, right?
It is.
Anything else that tipped your fancy?
That's the whole week. That's all I've been playing. It's all Final Fantasy all the time.
How about Skip? He doesn't usually get to participate.
I was playing Texas Hold'em Xbox 360.
Why?
Just because. I don't know.
Okay.
It's really addictive. And I've been playing single player offline because I'm afraid to lose my fake money.
I've actually
really
seen,
weird.
I actually downloaded that game and I looked at my friends list the other day, and you have like this crazy cash that you built up.
Really?
Do you have achievements attached to cash?
Yeah. I think it's like, I can't remember what it is.
You have like a couple thousand, right?
Something. Yeah.
Did you download it when it was free?
Yeah. Oh yeah, first thing.
Of course.
But I did play Rainbow Six Vegas. That's why I wasn't here last week. I was in Vegas, and there was a hands-on event of the single and multiplayer. I think I can only talk about the single player now because that embargo's up. But
preview is up today, by the way, on the front door of 1UP if you want to go check it out.
It's a lot like Rainbow Six 3 for Xbox was.
Oh, good. I like that one.
In Vegas with some new cool stuff, like rappelling is really cool. And the whole new rules of engagement thing where you're like, you're either in assault mode or you're in infiltrate mode. Assault mode is you and your guys just shoot at anything that moves. Infiltrate is like you can't shoot and your AI won't shoot unless you're fired upon. So it's like sneaking and like balls out, crashing through doors and blowing shit up.
Did you get to play the PS3 version or just the 360?
No, it's just the 360 version. And the PSP version was there, and I did play that, unfortunately.
Oh. Yeah, I bet that uses a lot of buttons.
Oh, yeah. Lots of buttons.
At the same time.
Yeah.
How does the 360 version look?
It looks good.
Does it look as good as the screens they had in EGM a few months back?
They were placeholder
graphics, weren't
they? Yeah, but does it look kind of grayish in terms of detail and textures?
Yeah, it looks good lighting, blue lighting.
This is what they need for that franchise, because everything they've done since 3 has sucked.
Yeah.
Are there any strippers in it?
No, not yet.
Can you call and order strippers into the game?
We have brand new screens.
Not yet.
Oh, we do?
Yeah, we got a brand new batch of screens, so if you pull them up right now, you want to check them out. We got a brand new batch of screens.
I think that's gratuitous enough of a plug for this preview.
Yeah.
I hear there's an excellent preview on 1UP today.
I did too. I don't know who wrote it, but
whatever.
I think it's fantastic.
The point wasn't that, is that they've actually done a bunch of those screens where they show like the
heat vision and thermal vision.
Yeah, like have the vision so you can see like the contrast between the shots.
And the other cool thing is the cover, which like in three, all you had was that little tilt move, so you can peek around corners. Right now, you pop out of first person and go into third person in cover, like you can see yourself against the wall, and it's not just you, like, you can't just aim, like, through the door. You have 360 aim.
Gears of Rainbow Six.
Yeah.
Like, how many copies of Killzone did game developers buy?
More than, you know, consumers, apparently.
Apparently. It's like, wow, this is a great idea.
Do you mean Killzone, or do you mean Kill Switch?
Oh, Kill Switch. Kill Switch.
The blind fire thing.
Yeah. Kill Switch, sorry.
Yeah, that did not so well.
Yeah, no, it didn't sell at all, but apparently everyone bought into it.
Yeah, the sequel got canceled, too. The sequel was at E3 one year. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I missed that.
It had a different name. What was it called? I don't remember. It got canceled.
Yeah.
Anyway,
that's what I was playing.
I continued what I was talking about last week. So I did play a bit more Lego Star Wars.
Did you see it through?
I do like very much, and I know that the people at LucasArts listen to this and they read our blogs, but I do have to say there was one night, and this is why I stopped playing it, apart from Test Drive, which I'll go into in a minute. I actually fell asleep while I was playing it. And I don't think I've ever done that.
Oh, I've fallen asleep playing minigames.
Yeah. But I don't think it was asleep out of boredom. It was asleep out of, the game has a certain simplistic rhythm to it.
A lot of mashing of buttons.
And I kind of got into its rhythm. And
it matched your natural body.
And it matched my biorhythm.
Like lulled you to sleep.
So it lulled me to sleep. So I was playing through, I think it was one of the Empire Strikes Back things. And it was just this sort of, you know, running around, picking things up and opening some doors. And I'm suddenly aware that I just woke up and I had no idea how long I'd been out.
Were enemies hitting you?
No, I was in a completely empty room. Because you get to this point with these puzzles where, you know, you have to run back and get it, you know, you run back with Chewie and it puts the helmet on your head so you can pretend to be a stormtrooper. And I don't know. I'm sorry, Seabake. I know you listen. I'm not saying it's bad. I just nodded off.
Well, I fell asleep playing minigames I liked, including I once fell asleep playing Devil May Cry 2 and woke up and like six enemies were hitting me. And I was like, how did I fall asleep playing Devil May Cry 2? It's like a constant action.
How are you still alive?
I got a better one for you, and you'll appreciate this having also worked at EB Games. So many, many years ago when I ran an EB Games, we had a TV in the store where we did demo tapes, and I would take stuff home and play it.
I used to make tapes too. How nerdy are we?
All right, yeah. So I used to make tapes, and so I made a tape for then one of the clips that I included. It was Legend of Legaia, because hey, I like my RPGs, and
so do I.
It wasn't so great, so you'll appreciate that I fell asleep while playing Legend of Legaia. But apparently, I didn't really know that I had fallen asleep because I put the tape on and it's playing up on the big widescreen in our store, and we're in the middle of the day, and one of my buddies who actually works at Retro, Kynan Pearson, walks up to me and he says, "Hey, Garnet, were you playing Legaia last night?" And I was like, "Yeah, it's up on the tape." He's like, "Yeah, I know. Take a look." And we look up there, and the character is standing there doing his idle animation, tapping his foot, and it's like 30 minutes of the character standing there in an idle animation.
The fact that you taped you falling asleep and then showed it. And you wake up, turn up tape, and be like, "All right, that's what I wanted."
Exactly.
That's a wrap.
Awesome. Mission accomplished.
I'm falling asleep.
You should take your medication more often.
How many copies of the game did that sell?
Too many. I gave so much ass.
It was awesome. It was so funny.
So the thing that stopped me playing Lego Star Wars, apart from nodding off, was Test Drive Unlimited, which we talked a little bit about last week. I am now through the infatuation and into the, I'm kind of bored with it.
Are you ever going to send me that code, by the way?
There's no point. The thing doesn't work.
Oh, no, it works now.
Oh, it does?
Oh, yeah. No, they turned that on.
I mean, part of the problem that bugs me so much about this damn game is everything in it's broken, including the stuff that they're trying to do to help sell more copies.
Are you guys in the beta test or something?
No, we actually have retail.
It's more of a live beta.
Yeah, it's a live beta.
We do have some news on that coming
up
in the third segment.
So one of the things that they do to try and encourage, like, you know, you get someone buys it and you have some friends that are into cars that have 360s, you have a unique code. If you exchange unique codes, it gives you two really cool cars. But for the first week and a half the game was on sale, the damn thing didn't work. Much like half the other features in the game. But that's not why I got bored with it. It kind of lost me when it just got to this point where the objectives were just laborious. It was like, go do this. And it's like, okay, take this. You start off and there's races and all the obvious stuff. But then to take advantage of the open world, you run into people and they'll give you like a really cool car. So it's an opportunity to drive a really cool car early. And it's a delivery thing. So I take this car, drive it down there, drop it off. And if you do it with no damage, you get a bunch of money. And it's kind of cool. But every successive one that you do, you have to go further. So it gets to the point where here's a car. So, you know, I got one, and some like Tom Selleck looking dude gives me a Ferrari 308. And it's in Hawaii. Okay, I get it. And it's like, drive a bazillion miles and don't crash. And
it's not as fun anymore now.
It's not as fun because you're just driving across an island. And then the AI in the game is a bit weird. And like, so you can be driving along, and then suddenly out of nowhere, someone will blindside you, which immediately knocks off a bunch of the value of the car because it's been damaged.
That, kind of a little too realistic.
That would drive me crazy. That's when I would stop playing.
So you're like, all right, I'm going to go back to the beginning and do it again. And then there'll be another thing, and like something will clip you. And if you run off the asphalt, it starts penalizing you as well. So, you know, I'm trying to get back on. I'm just like, no, I don't want to be punished.
This is the dilemma I faced when I was reviewing it, because I had to decide to either review it for what it did right that I had fun with, or knock it down for what it did wrong that I disagreed with.
Very admirable. I think the whole like living, breathing world, if they get it nailed,
is awesome. That's a blast.
But right now it doesn't work.
The problem that I have with it that I kind of got to was that,
and the bikes can bite me, by the way.
Oh, the bikes point out the big problem with the game is that the handling model is mediocre at best. The steering is completely linear. It's almost digital in its linearity, so you have minimal control there. And then most of the stuff you do in single player, particularly, is time attack stuff, which is like Gran Turismo license tests. Mm-hmm. And by the way, Gran Turismo actually has a good handling engine.
Didn't you give this game like an 8.5?
No, I gave it an 8.
Okay.
I gave it an 8, and I gave it an 8 because of what it does, which is right, which is when you're just driving around on the island, it's a blast.
I like the island.
When people come flying up to you and you just get involved.
And to be honest, the first 5-6 hours that you play it, I mean, it's very interesting, and there's a lot of opportunity to do things. But when you start trying to get into the real meaty parts of what they were trying to do that was different, which is the community stuff, the online stuff, it fails on the technology side. It desperately needs patching and fixing. There's some stuff that they turned off, which Garnet can go into in a bit more detail. And then what you find is that the community isn't responding the way they thought it would to what they're offering. So there's a bunch of single player objectives around the map, and then a bunch of multiplayer. And you log into a multiplayer, and it's a specific objective, which it's a different way of doing player matching.
It has clans and stuff.
It has clans, yeah.
Car clubs.
But it's online challenges are just a different way of doing player matching. So it's like, okay, I'm going to go in this race and get this reward, but instead of it revolving around what they obviously wanted it to do, what it ends up is just a bunch of people with crazy cars gathering in one place and going and racing. So at the beginning of the experience, when you don't have an insane car that'll do 200 miles an hour, you try and log into it, and you're up against guys in Salines and Ferraris and Lamborghinis, and you're just like, ugh.
They didn't incentivize it properly so that people would still be racing the mid-class cars. So you still have that top-end heavy deal
where everyone's just racing. One of the best early cars in the game is an Audi TT. You're never going to find someone, unless you're in a club with them and you specifically ask them to go do it. You're never going to run into a race where people are driving TTs and Golfs and
which
sort
is
of mid-level
why
cars.
More than half of the multiplayer challenges probably won't be hardly ever used, because they're set for car classes and people don't want to use car classes. They just want to go run around in the high-end car.
Yeah.
Because they didn't figure out how to incentivize it the right way. Maybe when I'm there to play, we'll have a little more fun. I'm sorry I wasn't there because I was in Seattle.
That's okay.
But Seattle was cool because I got to see an awesome Xbox Live Arcade game called Small Arms, which is really cool, because this is what people really expected and hoped for. And there's nothing wrong with taking old arcade games and putting them on Live Arcade. That's cool. That's fun. It's retro. But this is really cool. It's like, you saw it, right? You saw the video.
Yeah, I saw the video. To me, it looked instantly like Smash Brothers meets like Metal Slug or something.
Those are two of the guy's favorite games. So I interviewed the Jacob, and I forget his last name, Jacob, who's like the head of Gastronaut. It's three guys in a loft. It's so cool. It's like
garage games anymore. It's loft games.
Yeah, it's like what it used to be like, I think. You know, I go to see these guys, and I'm like hanging out with them on the couch, petting the designer's dog, who's like hanging out with us while we're playing their game. And they love games. They have games all over the place in there. It really is. So the game works like Smash Brothers, where you're running around on an environment that's flat 2D, where you can jump to different levels. And then it has like Smash TV control, sort of, where you use the right stick to aim where you're firing, and then the trigger to fire. The challenge to it is that you don't have enough fingers to do everything, because in order to do like the jumping, you have to take your finger off the thumbstick to like jump. So you're trying to jump and in the midair, you can do like,
is that intentional?
It's just, you run out of hands, you know? So
is it, But it's that, fun.
That strikes me as a flawed control system. Because the one thing that's finite in video games is most people have two hands.
It doesn't break things for this reason. It forces you to choose. Because what happens is when you're not using the thumbstick, aim tracks where you're going. So you still have control over where you're shooting to the extent of where you're moving. But if you want to use precision aim, you have to not be jumping and bouncing around. And what's cool is the characters are designed to take advantage of that. So like one character has a sniper rifle. And if you stop in place, then he actually puts out a red targeting laser. So you wouldn't think that kind of control, that kind of character would work in this game, but it does, because they've actually designed levels that have sight sniper perches where you can, if you get there, snipe over the entire level. And when that little red beam comes across the screen, all of a sudden everybody starts running for cover.
Oh, sounds really weird, but I'm definitely curious. Like, see, like Smash Brothers with sniping. So
it is really. Yeah. So then like another character is a ninja with a sword. So it has like almost all of its strength in up close attacks. And you've got like a character that has like a flamethrower.
Is it four players at the same time?
It's four player at the same time. You can play it against bots, or at any time you can bring people in through live to play multiplayer.
So when's it going to be live?
We don't really know.
How much are they going to charge? How much is it going to be?
We don't really know that.
We don't really know that either. Questions are up. I can tell you this much. It's really looking good now. It's amazing how much they get out of the game. I was telling Skip, these guys have like a gig worth of assets, and the Xbox Live Arcade max download size is 50 meg. They're running so much compression that they actually get those assets down to 50 meg.
Wow.
And it looks fantastic. They're awesome with their programming. The game looks fantastic. They were telling me about how, well, you see, 360 has six programming pathways, and we're using three of them for particle effects. It was killing me. It's what's cool is to know that there are guys who are pushing the hardware with a live arcade game.
Good.
And doing something nice with
That's
it.
That's cool.
The other game I saw was Shadowrun. What's your guys' impression so far of Shadowrun from what you've seen?
Tech demo?
I played at E3, and it's actually a fairly decent shooter with some fun stuff with really shitty graphics.
I think it's a tech demo for PC versus Xbox.
I can agree with you to the extent that it's PC versus... I don't know about tech demo. It's definitely not a tech demo. It's a sophisticated game.
To me, it had kind of like a Counter-Strike feel almost, mixed with like platforming.
But Counter-Strike with magic.
Yeah, but it actually played decently, but looked like shit. So that's once again my opinion of that game.
Let me up the plays decent to plays awesome.
Okay.
This is like one of the most fun multiplayer games I've ever played, but there's no way they're going to escape the Counter-Strike.
It's multiplayer only, right? There's no single player campaign at all.
It's multiplayer only. When you start out, you have a buy menu from which you buy techs and weapons, and it's all objective-based team play. So, yeah, of course you're going to get compared to Counter-Strike. Stop trying to say otherwise. And the other thing is that they're reinventing first-person shooters. They're not reinventing crap, because you're running around with a gun.
I hope they're reinventing the art style, because that looked even shittier.
Well, okay, so what you saw at E3 was not at all final graphics. They have like one character now that has final art to him, which was the human, which you'll see like in the videos and stuff that we have. And then they have one level that's finished, which is what we got to play in. And it looks nice. I mean, it looks like it's supposed to. It's all really well done. What's cool about it is the verticality of it, because the magic, one of the things they decided in the beginning was that magic was not going to be a weapon. So you don't go around throwing fireballs and that kind of thing, because they thought that, you know, what's cool about a fireball? It's just a rocket launcher, right? It's just a rocket launcher, different animation. What you do with magic, what they did for magic is like what people hack in and cheat other games with. So like there's a magic that lets you see through walls.
Right.
There's a magic that lets you teleport like no clip.
It's teleports, flying, double jumps.
Right. So,
and you can combo these things together too. And it's pretty cool.
It's awesome. The gameplay, once the action starts, it's totally frantic, totally crazy. The character classes and combinations of magic and tech make it off the wall.
When's it out?
Whenever Vista releases. That's literally the release date.
It'll be the launch game.
It has to be the two together.
It has to be the two together, because that's so much. And that's kind of like what you said when we were talking about in my office the other day. It's very much a controller centric game. People had wondered, how is it going to work between mouse and keyboard and controller?
I think Microsoft's going to put a lot of time and effort into pushing people to use the Xbox 360 controller on a PC and get away from mouse and keyboard. And I think the hardcore, it's going to be a tough battle. I'm not sure Shadowrun is the right game to try and lead with that, because I think a lot of mouse and keyboard guys are going to be like, I don't want to play that game anyway.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it is. I'll disagree with you. They will try mouse and keyboard and
he
hardcore.
He was fully immersed in the Kool-Aid this week.
Yeah. What flavor was it?
Dude, I'm telling you, I've played a lot of multiplayer games. This is the most fun.
They're very persuasive up there at Microsoft.
There was no persuading going on. We were playing the game for 3 hours. It was two hours.
When I played E3, I came away like, oh, yeah, that is a fun. It's a very PC-style game, but it is fun. But the question is,
you think it's going to get the Half-Life guys? Like, you know, Team Fortress 2 is coming whenever.
Yeah.
But you
well,
think,
if you're going to say nay to this game, the reason you're going to say nay to it is that it's a very intelligent game, and the entry barrier is going to be very high, and they're aware of that. They're trying to fix it in single player by having, like, introductory maps and bots. But the problem is going to be playing this game with pickup groups is not going to work.
I also think the problem is that making a shooter out of Shadowrun is just not
dumb.
Smart.
Yeah, well,
people
have been
like
waiting. We've been waiting for a new Shadowrun since the SNES.
Yeah.
And that was a great.
They both had one.
Yeah, they both had one. I played the SNES one, and it was a really, really good RPG. And I've been wanting something with, like, beautiful Blade Runner type graphics for years and years and years and years now.
Yeah.
And the first time they bring it back up, and it's this weird Aztec magic shooter.
This isn't what Shadowrun fans want out of a Shadowrun game, and it's also a very hardcore shooter. It's not accessible in the way that, like, Halo is.
So it's going to be one of those games where you wander into it and you're just going to get the shit kicked out of you and then be like, ugh.
It's a very high level gameplay, and, like, if you walk into this, people are going to be teleporting and doing crazy shit, and you'll be like, what am I doing?
Well, then let me fan the fire for a minute, because the reason this is a Shadowrun game is because all the guys there are Shadowrun fans. They know that they've pissed off the community by changing the storylines and that kind of stuff, but they wanted to make a Shadowrun game, and they are a shooter house. That doesn't mean that they're not inclined to be persuaded into letting someone else make an RPG with the license, which they have control over.
Right.
And the way they described it is, look, there's two ways we could do this. We could get someone who's a good studio to do it as a partner, or we could take, like, the Blizzard model, like they did with, you know, making an MMO, and just hire a bunch of people to make the game. And I will say that, we talked about it. One of the people that they talked about the idea of doing the game with was the doctors.
Mm.
And apparently, the doctors said that when they've talked to people about, you know, like, if we ever did another IP game, what would be cool, Shadowrun always places very, very high.
They're about to throw themselves into a new RPG of their own, though, aren't they?
Yes. So I think that they might be locked up, but maybe they could help consult. I mean, they all have good relationships through the Microsoft family. If Shadowrun, the first-person shooter, works and the IP has some value, don't be surprised. There may be an RPG still to come. So what's happening out there in our community where they're not probably concerned one way or the other about Shadowrun?
Apparently, Nintendo did something this week. I don't know. Judging by the fact that there are now 304 responses
weird,
on the board.
I was up all night Thursday and Friday morning, and I didn't notice anything.
It
was weird.
Was that the night that the guy was live blogging a video from an event six months ago?
Yeah, that was it. I was following that, and Iwata was wearing a pink tie, and I had no idea what was going on, but I wish I could have been there.
So, Tifiza kicked it off. And I think just about everything that could possibly be discussed about the Wii has been discussed in this thread. Talking about the price, the fact that the games are a bit pricey comes up a lot. But go check it out. It's 31 pages deep. Go contribute. What else? Lord Zod kind of jumps off of this and asks what you'll be doing that week. I think trying to get people to talk about if they're going to be, you know, going and standing in line for a PS3 or going and getting a Wii. And this was somewhat countered by R. Chapeau. How do you pronounce that? Chapeauteur?
Chapeauteur.
Chapeauteur.
I'll go with Chapeauteur.
He actually brought up that...
R. Chapeau.
November the 19th is a Sunday, as we know, and says there are still places in America that have blue laws. Do you know what a blue law is?
No.
A blue law...
I grew up in Texas.
...is a religious-based law that won't allow non-essential stores to be open on a Sunday. And he lives in Bergen County, New Jersey, which has blue laws. Places that will sell Wiis won't be open in New Jersey.
Not any different than any other Nintendo hardware launch.
Sundays.
Nintendo always launches on a Sunday.
I think sometimes they do Mondays, which is also just as
really?
Weird. I think if something came out on Monday once.
Software, right?
Their games often come out on Monday.
Games come out on Monday, but
they do Sunday launches.
Yeah.
In Japan, they do Sunday launches so that, you know, kids aren't out of school and stuff. But
what's going to happen with the Wii coming out, like, on the same weekend but after PS3? Is that going to help them any?
I think whoever doesn't get a PS3,
yeah,
and that's
going to
be a lot of people, they're going to say, oh, hey, Wii comes out in 2 days, I'll come back.
Yeah.
And not spend or save $350.
Exactly.
I can't even imagine.
And we don't know supply numbers yet, but
all we know is America's getting the majority.
Yeah.
4 million worldwide.
And there will be lots.
Which is like nice opposition to the N64 launch.
Or most launches for that general.
Yeah.
I know. That's very cool. Can you imagine what video game stores are going to be like on that weekend? Gears of War.
They're going to make a lot of money.
PS3. And we.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want to work at EB. I know you both use tech. I feel sorry for anybody who works at a game enthusiast store.
Yeah, you guys
work in OT.
We appreciate the soldiering you're doing out there, because that's going to be a crazy...
Yeah, and they need to hurry up and release information about pre-orders. Like, right now, you cannot pre-order either of these systems anywhere in America.
No one's going to do pre-orders.
Amazon,
anymore.
I think, has...
Oh, today?
I think has its pre-order thing.
Today?
There was something up about
really?
It. Yeah,
check that out.
I have a connection if you guys keep talking for a second.
I don't think anyone's going to pre-order PS3. The supply is going to be so tight on PS3. Can you imagine?
There will be pre-orders.
You think?
You can pre-order bundles that'll cost you like $1,200,
okay,
maybe.
Like, we're lucky enough to live three blocks from the only PlayStation store in America where they will get the most PlayStation 3s of any store in America. So that's where I'll be camping out.
Lining up.
I'll be lining up.
I want to send you and Luke to the line. Maybe with
Luke and I should
camera.
Fight.
Yeah,
we should fight at the line.
I want you guys to interview people on the line.
I'll probably... go line up with
him. I will, yeah. See.
Sorry, man.
Hey, and if you don't want to keep it, you can sell that shit on eBay.
We should do the show.
I will say this. If I go stand in line, it will be for my personal use, because the whole selling on eBay thing, I appreciate that America's a free market economy, but I hate people to do that because it takes one out of circulation that someone could have bought for regular price.
We'll talk to Luke. He's going to do that.
I know he's going to do that.
We should do the show live from the PlayStation store.
It's 17th is a Friday. That's when we do the show. It's three blocks away.
Mm-hmm.
I'll start thinking about it.
Yeah.
If I do it, it'll be... Actually, what we should do is we should just talk to Sony about letting us set up there.
Oh,
that's encampment.
Better.
Yeah, we should
have
be set
bivouac.
Up. We should be set up there as a, like, bivouac. And
you can't, you can't pre-order. You can only add it to your wish list on Amazon.
Apparently, you can pre-order Zelda at EB. That's it.
I've heard that.
Yeah,
Just Zelda.
Games are not the problem. The hardware is. They've been burned by hardware. I would be shocked if EB Games actually does pre-orders on either of these consoles. I will be shocked,
really?
Because they had... 360 turned out to be an absolute clusterfuck for them.
They got burned bad,
and they pissed so many people off.
I remember driving all over the place, like, really early in the morning when that damn thing came out. I was out in Chicago, and my brother-in-law wanted one. I think he pre-ordered one, so he was fine, and we were just sort of trundling around seeing if anyone had anything at all.
Yeah, that week, man. That week is going to be crazy.
Yeah.
Well, so Nintendo knows what they're doing with the Wii. They're going to put a lot of units out there. They'll probably stock up really strong in the Walmarts and the Targets of the world, so hopefully... driving around will be some way that you can get one. And in just a minute, we're going to hear from Luke, who's going to tell us what you'll be able to get. He's coming to us from New York City with full hands-on impressions of the Wii event, and we'll be back in just a minute with that.
You're listening to One Up Yours, part of the One Up Radio Network.
Hey, kids! Podcasts are here. You've been hearing about podcasts? You like podcasts? You've been reading about podcasts? Well, we got a podcast. Jeff, don't we got a podcast?
We do have a podcast.
CGW Radio.
CGWRadio.oneup.com.
What's that? One of those URL things?
Podcast.oneup.com.
Whoa.
You can also get it at iTunes Music Store.
Wow!
Holy cow!
Can't get enough of DL.TV? Then download our podcast. Just go to DL.TV and click on the audio link.
Turning them loose.
You'll be able to listen to Patrick, Robert, and the rest of the gang over and over and over again.
Remember to keep the ear canal clean and don't share if you don't want to risk spreading disease.
All right, it's the part you've all been waiting for, with Luke coming to us from New York with the whole scoop. He's been playing the Wii games. I'm going to refrain from any of the stupid Wii jokes. But, Luke, you get to take the lead, man. What's it been like playing those games?
Well, it's been kind of... I mean, it's kind of been a little bit disappointing, actually. And I hate to sort of just come in the... You know, it's gloomy and doomy in New York, and it's kind of gloomy and doomy for a lot of the Wii software, I think. I know John, on his blog, was talking about how... he didn't want to hear me talk about it as a peripheral, but, you know, I still am seeing that same sort of, like, peripheral games. And the games that aren't peripherals, like Legend of Zelda, I mean, those games look incredible. And that game is playing better. It looks better. Another positive thing there was Metroid. Metroid Prime 3 Corruption was actually in a lot better shape. So, but the other stuff, like...
Well, how about we start right here? What were the good games that you played?
Metroid Prime Corruption is in a lot better shape than I thought it would be. It does, like I wrote in the preview that I wrote for 1UP, it does exactly, at this one point in the demo, what I want out of a Wii game, which is like using the Wii controller as like an immersive tool instead of using it as like, it's a tennis racket, it's a pool cue, it's a gun. That shit's stupid and easy. I like that it's pushing the canister, twist the canister, the Wii becomes, you know, an extension of you.
But I mean,
Luke, that's something that they need to explore in the game space.
Luke, I mean, to be honest, from E3, you also weren't into like the quick, casual pick up and play games then either. It's maybe you're just not into those types of games because other people who are playing these are really into like Wii Sports or into the mini games.
Well, that was
Party.
A good setup because I think that WarioWare is really fun.
Well, yeah, I'm really pissed off that we're not getting WarioWare this year and Japan's getting it launched. I mean, there's no reason.
Do we know why that's happening?
I mean, the same reason that happened with DS. Like, they just don't think it's like a viable launch title here, I guess. It's weird.
But you would think the success of WarioWare would, you know.
It's a bigger deal in Japan than it is here.
Yeah. Luke, what feedback did you get there on WarioWare?
Not a lot of feedback. I mean, there wasn't anyone directing that particular game when I was playing it. There was just the NOA reps were watching the stuff like Red Steel and making sure you were getting around okay in Corruption. I mean, with WarioWare, they were just, you know, they weren't really there. There was a guy next to it demoing the Mii channel, which is something that I thought was actually kind of cool in its own way. It seemed like Nintendo's answer to sort of like Nintendo's answer to the customization that Xbox Live and Xbox 360 offers you with your gamer's card. The Mii is a very, like, Nintendo-y spin on that, I think, at least.
You know, the whole channel concept, I was really surprised by that. I didn't expect it to be so fully fleshed out. And it also, it seems really Japanese to me, the whole idea that you have this weather channel, and you can, like, make your little avatar, which looks really cute, and you can leave, like, notes for your family members and send, like, phone messages to
phone
it.
Text and the whole text messaging
that's
thing?
That's all very Japanese, yeah. Though. Like, but it seems like a little, maybe too Japanese.
I don't need it. I had this argument yesterday in my office.
What, the weather thing?
Yeah, about the weather channel.
It's not aimed to people like
us. I mean, it's cool. I think it's all very cool, but I wonder if like it'll turn some hardcore gamers off because it seems like too much like a...
But the gamble is, for the hardcore gamers, it might turn off. What people that have never tried a game system might it turn on? I was talking to my wife about it, and I'm like, oh, yeah, when it's just sat there, you can, you know, it'll tell you the weather and stuff. And she's, and her perception of that was, oh, that's pretty cool and kind of friendly.
Yeah, I mean, it is cool. Like, it's surprising.
And I think the fact that it will message with phones is really significant. I mean, this is, you know, it's not brand new functionality for anything, but the fact that a gaming message system is going to finally deliver. I mean, Sony have been talking about doing this with the Sony Ericsson phones for a long time. And when the PSP launched, we thought that was going to be part of the strategy. Right. It never happened. So...
But wait, wasn't Wii supposed to win on games and gaming? And now we're talking about how, oh, it has all these other bullshit functionalities.
But it's not the bullshit functionality that's the key. It's the bullshit functionality is making it friendly to non-gamers.
I like that we're championing something that we're also calling bullshit. I think, just sitting there watching the press conference, too, I was really surprised when they were sort of, really surprised to see them rolling out all this functionality. The Wii is way, way, way more of a convergence device than I expected it to be. I mean, even though the news story broke the night before, like seeing them run through, you know, the different Wii channels and like the Wii photo demonstration was pretty cool. And it's like, I don't know if people are necessarily going to use this, like tech savvy people. But I think that some
you don't know. Wait a minute, I can answer that for you. They won't. Who the hell wants to surf the internet at 480 on their TV screen? Give me a freaking break. And pay money for it. I know.
Yeah,
I want to pay
the
money.
The browser costs money surprised me. I thought it would be packed in.
Internet browsing, not so much, but the photo stuff sounds like Apple-ish to
me. It's very Apple. It's also what Sony's been talking about with the PS3. It's what they talked about with the PS2 that they're finally doing on PS3. But part of the problem is this is another fucking device that is designed to do that. I mean, how many things do we need that, oh, you can look at your photos, you can listen to your music.
But like, think about how affordable this is compared to to iPods or, you know, TiVos or whatever people have. For the average consumer, this is like a pretty high-end device that does a lot of things for a very small amount of money.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's get into the pricing.
Doesn't play DVDs, though.
Well, DVD players are $30.
Mm-hmm.
I started us off into games because I wanted to like get on a little bit of a positive note before we jumped into the price thing, which I know everyone's been like at the top of their list. Luke, let's let you start off. What was your reaction to the whole announcement of pricing and the peripherals and all that?
Well, I mean, they came in exactly where they said they would, under $250. So there's like the good. The bad is they came in $50 too high. The excuse can be the packed in sports game, which I and most people, I don't think most consumers care about. What we should be concerned with is the price of these fucking controllers.
Yep.
Like, it's awful.
Not really.
What the hell?
Because you don't need. What are the odds of you needing four nunchucks? You probably don't. You probably like.
You're right.
Just the second one. What you should do is you should give only one person the controls to play the game, and the other three people who want to play should be disadvantaged by not having the extra because you were too cheap to shell $20
How much is an Xbox 360 controller, and then how much is the charging station for it, and how much is a PS3 controller going to be?
It's all too much. Like, it doesn't justify $60.
To buy a full set of Xbox 360, it's $60 too.
I mean, Jeremy Parrish wrote an awesome blog last night about this entire thing. It's like $60 too much, $50 for wireless controller too much. All of this is too much. It doesn't matter who's doing it, it's too much.
Well, controller prices didn't just get expensive. I mean, Sega Saturn, when it came out 10 years ago, the controllers were $40. They were. This isn't a new thing. We're used to paying this much for controllers. Controllers haven't been cheap for like 15 years, people.
But the whole thing with the Wii is the whole playing together thing. And they've been hitting that in all the videos, and now out of the box it's one controller and
$50. No, wait a minute. Let's talk about that. Out of the box, it's $250 with a pack-in game and no second controller so you can play with your friends, which is another $60.
Another thing is everyone's freaking out about the price, but you know, when you look at Zelda, look how good Zelda looks. It really does look like a good game. It looks, to me, comparable to something like Cameo. Like, if you're just a rare consumer and you see a commercial that shows you Zelda, and then you see this system comes out and costs $250, and it comes with a game. At the same time, you're seeing Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3. We're really in the know. We know that, well, actually, those systems have a lot better graphics. But to, like, the regular consumer, who are the people Nintendo's going after, they're going to see this as a huge bargain that's half the price of the competitors.
Bargain my ass. Reggie was right there saying and bragging about how much money they're going to make off of everything. The reason it's expensive is because they're trying to profit off of every single piece of it.
Right away.
The fact that you're so angry here about this pricing structure is really shocking to me.
Surprise, a company wants to make money. This is actually a company that can make money off hardware.
Like, at the same time, we're not getting into is like
this. I'm surprised that a company with an inferior piece of technology is so hell-bent to make money that they price themselves out of their advantage.
But the inferior piece of technology is irrelevant in this because they're not going after
it. It's not irrelevant when they raise themselves into the price stratosphere of the other consoles.
But they haven't.
But the hardware isn't.
It isn't.
250, a 30, it is when a you 30 start. Gig iPod is $250.
This is not an iPod we're talking about.
An iPod does a lot less.
And when you talk about miniaturized componentry, it's much more expensive. Your laptop that's sitting in front of you is far more expensive than a comparably equipped home computer because it's all miniaturized to fit in there. An iPod you can carry around in your pocket.
You're getting all flustered. You're going to have a heart attack, old man. It is not that expensive.
People do not buy technology. They buy functionality.
$200 was the magic price for this console. They didn't do that.
You're pulling the magic price out of your ass. You know nothing. What are you basing
I know nothing.
On?
I know it's
Shane,
on perception.
You said
perception.
Last week it was going to be $150. Kiss my ass.
I heard that from somebody else. I didn't believe that. I thought it was going to be around $200, $250. I thought it'd be $200 without a game. It's $250 with a game. I think that's a fine price. I'm excited.
So where are you getting
I'm excited
from?
About paying
where are you
that
get,
price.
Where are you getting that from? You pulling that out of your ass?
No, it's what Nintendo said. They said it was going to be $250, which is half the price of the competitors. Half. I mean, like, it's not like they're charging $399 or something. This thing is
charging
cheap.
$310 basically.
You don't have to buy the second controller.
Not. How many? Here's like, because part of it is, if you want. I mean, at the moment they seem to be moving. It is that okay? I buy one, you buy one. We get together. I bring my controller with
me.
Which is a bullshit approach, but that is kind of the approach.
It's how they tried to sell connectivity too.
Yeah,
like, get your Game Boy and your Game Boy cable and come over and play games. That didn't work.
This is a question I have for you, Luke. So in Japan, the game Welcome to Wii, which I think is called Wii Party here, it comes with a controller when you buy it. Do you know if that's happening here when that eventually comes out?
I haven't heard anything about that happening.
Yeah, in Japan, it's bundled with a Wiimote for like a regular price. So that right there is your other, you know, is your other controller and a game for $50.
Well, Luke, you've been pretty outspoken about the capabilities of the machine and how, you know, the Wii was, you know, basically a current gen technology with a new peripheral attached to it. What's your take?
Well, that's absolutely still my take. I've seen nothing to convince me otherwise. I do think, however, that a year from now it'll probably be we're starting to see the system being used the way that Nintendo wants it to be used, and I think that it's a lot like the DS syndrome, where when the DS came out, I thought that the DS was a piece of garbage, and now I think, you know, I've
we all did
the whole way out here, and it's, you know, it's not, and there is some great use of the touchscreen. But I'm concerned when I'm playing games like, you know, Marvel Ultimate Alliance on the Wii, and it's like there's no point to. And Marvel Ultimate Alliance, for example, even sort of eschews the Wii controls, and is like, okay, well, if you don't want to waggle your controller around, just press B instead to do this move.
I mean, I think we're gonna see a lot of that from third parties.
Yeah, and see, games like that I have a huge problem with, because, like, I do see the Wii as, like, this... It has the potential to do what Nintendo wants it to do and to change the way people play games, but when publishers just sort of half-ass, hokey-pokey their way into these, like, hackneyed bullshit control schemes, then, yeah, you know what? It's going to make Nintendo's Wii look even worse than it is, because you're going to have these publishers just being like, well, we can maybe sell another 45,000 copies on this platform, downgrade and port it over. And that's stupid.
I think it just might be a launch thing, though, because you kind of saw similar things with 360, like the first generation Madden. They just did it to cash in.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take a year before you start seeing the real creative stuff.
I think the DS is a better analogy, because on DS you still see, like, shitty kids games and crap that they just like, oh, it's a map up top or whatever. But I think we're going to always see that. I think, you know, every kid's game is going to come out on Wii, but there's still going to be awesome third-party games. Like, look at Resident Evil. Like, Resident Evil is exactly what I wanted. It's, you know, it complements Resident Evil 5 at the same time, but it uses the Wii, you know, effectively. I think it's awesome.
Is that this a light gun game?
No. It uses, you know, you aim with the Wii controller, but it plays like RE4. It plays specifically like the Mercenaries mode, or whatever that's called at the end. It's like,
I think it's Mercenary.
Yeah, it's like where you just like play through it really fast, and it's more like a shooter, and I think it looks awesome. People are haters.
There's still some problems with the whole like Wiimote censoring, and like the way you actually, when you're playing the games, it wasn't necessarily the best environment to play at Nintendo, because what it was we were in this room where they did the presentation, and to the right side of the room were like 40 kiosks set up, and so you had to stand 5 or 6 feet away to sort of make sure that the sensor picks you up on these big TVs and the sensor or whatever, and it's not conducive to, you know, being around a ton of people. And the other thing is, it's so, it becomes so easy for the sensor to go off the screen that you'd walk around and you'd see all these people sort of with confused looks on their faces, like, why the fuck can't I play this game right? And that's a huge problem, I think, with the Wii, and it extends further to stuff like, you know, Ultimate Alliance or even Metroid. If you watch the video on the 1UP show, I don't know if they use footage of me actually playing the game, but it's like watching a very special child trying to play something.
There's a learning curve. At E3 with Zelda, right, I felt retarded when I was playing it for 10 minutes.
Yeah, and that, like, that's not how video games should make you feel. Like, they should not make you feel dumb. And especially not a console that's like, we want to be really intuitive and we want to make it easy for everyone. Yeah. Like,
some of the games are intuitive, like, you know, like table tennis, duh, no one's going to spend 5 minutes trying to figure that out.
Tennis.
The game that's not Pilot Wings, what's it called?
Wing Island.
Wing Island, did you try that?
I didn't get to try that. I think,
because I mean, that looks like, you know, you hold it like a plane. Toy plane, yeah. You know, which seems exactly the way that the developers need to be thinking about.
Mm-hmm. Did you play boxing, Luke? Did you play Wii Boxing?
I didn't get to play boxing.
It looks fun.
But it looked like fun.
Yeah, it did look like fun.
Can you just rattle through the stuff you did play?
I played the entire Wii Play Suite, Metroid Prime Corruption, Marvel Ultimate Alliance, Twilight Princess, WarioWare, Mii Channel, Trauma Center, which was really cool.
Is it hard?
Actually.
Is it as hard as a DS game?
It's easy. I mean, it's easier, and they hit everything on easy. I played Madden, and like what I played from Madden was actually like not horrible.
I hear the passing is either love it or hate it. The passing is like kind of
weird.
Yeah,
well, I played like a bunch of the mini games, like from the training camp modes for Madden, and they were actually pretty cool. Like going through and doing the passing drill, it was something like you press down on the the dummies that you're passing to are mapped to different buttons on the control pad, like different directions or the A button or something. And then, so the icon flashes and you like press down and then flick your wrist to throw it. And the way you flick your wrist affected how the ball flew. And that was actually not terrible. I don't know that I would want to play a whole game of Madden like that, but as far as just going through the mini games, it was kind of cool.
Okay, but you know what? Listening to his voice, the most enthusiastic he's been about any of these games is freaking Madden.
Well, I mean, Luke is not exactly the person we expected to fall in love with Wii at this event. He's been kind of, you know, he had his mind made up since
E3. I'm super excited for Twilight Princess. Super excited
on the GameCube.
On my GameCube.
Exactly.
I think we're looking at the whole thing wrong. This thing is not for us.
Exactly.
It's not, you know, you got guys from EGM and 1UP sat around bitching about something that's too simple, and it isn't. it isn't for us. They don't care. They want new people to play games. They want things that aren't scary and aren't, you know, the whatever. The traditional video gamey video games just aren't going to work. It's going to be, you know, flying something like a toy plane or hitting something with a stick. That's what's going to work.
The cooking game.
The cooking game.
Then let me go back to the $250 price, because then they have a problem, because if it's $250 with a pack-in sports game, then you're going to be comparing directly.
For a lot of people, the pack-in sports game is all they need.
Okay, then why don't they just buy one of those $30 plug into the television sports games that does exactly the same thing?
Oh, instead of an iPod, why don't I buy an old tape player? Fucking
Mom, grandma, you're not going to look any better.
I don't want the, game with Pokemon. I don't want that at all. No, you're retarded. Like, Pokemon also, the only game online this year, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of surprising.
Yeah, it is the only game that's online.
Only
this
game
year,
online.
Sort
this
of
year.
One of the
but it's the game people want the most, probably, in the Nintendo generation.
I think we're getting hung up on it.
I think we're getting hung up on the $250. Like, $600 is a lot of money.
Yeah, $250 is not.
$250 these days is for the fully functioned version of something is about the price you pay. The PSP was that when it launched. The iPod, if you want the properly functioned one, that's how much it costs now.
Well, think about what was the last home console to launch at $250? Oh, right, you can't think of one.
The GameCube was $199.
This is the most expensive
every
Nintendo
console. Every other console before it.
But the GameCube
It's not 50. Look, I'll be the first to admit, $50 is not a huge amount of money. The difference between $250 and $200 is not a big deal. What is a big deal is that...
But the way you're reacting to it, you're acting like it is.
Yeah, because I'm trying to make the point, and you guys are so dead set that it's not an issue. You're, like, cock-blocking that whole thing, whereas it is an issue. Well, $250 versus $199 in public perception is a perceptive difference.
But $250 versus $399 and $499 and $599, that's
a bigger
difference.
If they'd have gone any cheaper in context, it would have cheapened it out of contention.
And then the first price drop would have made that worse.
The other thing, you launch at $199, how many price cuts can you do before you're non-existent?
Right.
I mean, if this thing's going to have some life, and it's not, it can't be.
I would tell you this, the PS2 pricing, the bump the PS2 sees every time they lower the price in how many of the units they sell would argue you differently, because every time they drop the price on that damn thing, it sells more units.
Right. So you have to start at a level where you can cut, because otherwise you run out of opportunity.
If you cut too much right away, it's...
You launch at $199, like, unless you're going to do... When Sony cuts $20 off, it doesn't do anything.
Right.
When they cut $50 off, it does. Mm-hmm. So you go from $199 and you're down to $149 and then you got one to go.
Yeah.
Speaking of Nintendo's smart pricing decisions, I think the virtual console pricing is excellent. It's exactly what we talked about. It makes sense. It's 5, 8, and 10.
I totally agree
and
with that.
Like, people think, oh, $10 is too much. No, you're paying like $8 for like feeding Frenzy and Xbox Live. You won't pay $10 for Ocarina of Time?
I was afraid that N64 games would be like 20 or 15.
Yeah,
I'm
10
so
is perfect.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to start any argument there. We're all in agreement about that, I think.
But one thing I want to talk about, though, about the virtual console pricing is the way that they did sort of skew, like, because Jeremy wrote about this in his blog, and I thought about it, too. Was the way that they did sort of skew the pricing where it's like 100 yen equals a dollar. Like, that's, I mean...
Right now, it's 117 yen equal dollar.
But the actual pricing, like I said on this week's One Up show, the actual pricing for the virtual console stuff didn't particularly bother me. I thought that it was pretty much what I expected it to be.
Yeah, I thought they hit the number on that one. So, surprise, we're not arguing.
We all agree.
No argument about the virtual console. You know what? That's because we're all excited about being able to play that stuff.
Yeah.
That's really where
makes this an uninteresting segment.
It does.
We all love each other.
That's where they're going to load up their launch lineup so that they have titles to play on this device after you buy it, right?
Well, another point I made when we were promoting this thing is people are upset that they're not showing like a lot of first-party titles yet, but you know, they're holding their hand back and they're kind of letting it sink in. Do you really need like Zelda and Mario and Smash Brothers at launch? Would you have time for all that? Probably not. And like this gives them a chance to like spread them out and not overload people too quickly with big-name games. I think it's fine.
There's definitely a lot of developer industry. Kennedy from over in Kennedy had to do that to him.
Kennedy.
That's an office joke. Kennedy has been talking about Matsuno developing for Wii in a news story here. And apparently, for those who don't know, Matsuno was the director on Final Fantasy XII before he left. He's also done Final Fantasy Tactics and Ogre Battle. Apparently, he's very, very happy with the Wii. He talks about how he likes the controller. However, when he tried it on Mario Galaxy, he realized this was a controller fit the game almost scarily well. Allows you to intuitively feel the game and its atmosphere. Did you try did you try the Mario game, Luke? I didn't hear.
I don't think it was playable.
No, you know, I didn't actually get to try the Mario game because I was busy playing the games that Matt Leon didn't want to. But Matt Leon loves them. Like, he played it for part of the afternoon, and then as they were shutting down the event at like 3:45. It ended at 4. Matt Leon was there from 3:45 to like 4:10 with this fucking goofy ass grin on his face, like he just got head from Kratos, God of War.
Wow!
It was just like, he just could not.
That's encouraging.
How happy this dude looked! And he's like, this game's perfect for it. And that's what Nintendo's gonna do. And you were sort of breaking up from the Skype signal there, okay. Mark, but. So I hope that you didn't say this already, but the stuff that Nintendo really spends their time working on for the console, and I'm not looking at you, Twilight Princess, but the stuff like Mario Galaxy, where it's going to be sort of tailor-made for the console, that's going to be the sort of stuff that's going to be the most exciting that we're going to see from Nintendo, I think, as far as exciting to us, like hardcore gamers, not, you know, hey, cool, tennis.
Yeah, I was talking about what Masuno said, and he actually went on to echo that exact same thing. He says, graphics have evolved. There are many games claiming that this generates a more realistic atmosphere. However, there are very few games that have a control interface that lives up to that atmosphere. With the Wii controller, you can actually feel like you're touching or living in the atmosphere. Shane agrees. Shane is not in that. He's like, Matsuno's onto something.
Matsuno's a little bit of a nut, but yeah, I look forward to seeing what he does.
I think the Wii is really going to show the divide between the really creative people and the people who are just going to cash in, like all the Activision ports and all that stuff.
Speaking of ports, did you play any of the Ubisoft stuff? Play Splinter Cell or Far Cry?
I didn't see Far Cry. Red Steel.
How's that looking?
That's looking like it's... I hope it gets delayed for like another 2 years.
It's the wrong game at the wrong time.
Oops. Yeah, it's the wrong... It's not the right kind
of game.
Didn't
they spend a lot of money on that game?
It's the right kind of game, and I believe it's going to sell really well for them. I think it'll sell pretty decently. But it's not the right kind of game as far as how Nintendo should want to be featuring their console. And it's great that Ubisoft is so supportive of the Wii, because Ubisoft's an extremely powerful and potent third-party developer. But this is not an example of what's working. Rayman, however, is. A lot of people were like, dude, you play Rayman? It's so awesome. I think it's great. And I was like, okay, well. I mean, a lot of people really like Rayman. So they sort of are hitting on both. They're sort of at both ends of the spectrum with those two games, I think.
Metroid Prime has been super popular here, and I know that was one of the games you started off talking about. Give us some details on what you played, what the level was like, how did it interact with the game?
You got a lot of flack for your preview, didn't you?
I'm sorry, you asked about Metroid?
Yeah.
Yeah, just give us a little more depth on that, because I think that's one of the most popular games for the Western market.
Yeah, well, Ryan O'Donnell and I talked about it a lot. There's some technical difficulties.
We got you.
We got you good. Just talk.
Okay. Ryan O'Donnell and I talked about it a lot last night and a lot at the show. As far as there's just a part of the cursor speed feels really incongruent in Metroid, where like in the immediate visor vicinity, that cursor flies around. But when you get to the edges, everything slows while Samus turns. And there was a preview written for another website that talked about this mode, expert mode, and claimed it solved everything. And all of a sudden you were, you know, turning on a dime, and that's not necessarily what I experienced. However, the demo for Corruption, the new level, it's there's sort of like there's a flood like Halo entity on the spacecraft that you encounter after a scripted event. There's some like scripted events that trigger different events in the demo, which is really cool to be like running through the space station, and then, you know, a door explodes, a dude gets blown up, and you turn around and run back into this other room, and like space pirates have taken over the room. You clean out the space pirates from the room, and you get an item, which led to the coolest part of the whole demo for me, which was, like I talked about earlier, that hand in a space system. And I think that Metroid Prime 3 Corruption has, I think it's going to end up being really good, but I still think that they're struggling with a way to make it control. Like, I would really like it if the cursor was locked at the center of the screen, so then when you turned, it was like a more typical FPS kind of.
Yeah, they really should give a lot of...
I'm sure you can relate.
They should let you customize the controls. I mean, they really should, I think. I hope.
Let you, well, like, expert mode.
Yeah, it'd be... Go ahead.
Well, the expert mode, allegedly, like you said, from what Matt Casamassina, whatever, I always mess up his name, pronunciation. From what he wrote, expert mode really fixes that, and we need to get our hands on that definitely to make that comparison.
Well, it's interesting because Shu was saying they had expert mode at E3 and he played it there.
Oh, okay.
And it wasn't actually new, and it was better. That's what he was saying.
Huh.
But
expert mode didn't strike me when I was messing around with it as the be-all, end-all correct control scheme for Metroid Prime 3. But like I said in the preview too, I think, was that, you know, this game's a long ways off still. you know, where it's not done. It is changing and it is evolving. And I mean, while I didn't particularly care for Echoes necessarily, I mean, Metroid Prime universally is, you know, accepted as an excellent game, and I expect that Corruption, when it's done, is going to be the same.
Luke, what did it feel more like a shooter, or did it feel like a Metroid game? Because I think one of the things that did Metroid Prime for me on Cube was that you were in a first-person world, but it didn't feel like a first-person shooter. It felt like a Metroid game.
Yeah, well, I think because of the nature of the demoing situation where you only have a few minutes to play the game, I think that it probably feels a lot more shootery than it will in the final game, because what made Prime so good was, like you were talking about, it was that sense of atmosphere. And I remember playing Prime on and, you know, it is this haunting, empty world. And the shooter, the Corruption demo doesn't feel anything like that. I mean, there's action in every room. There's always something going on in front of you. And it doesn't give you that sense of atmosphere. It doesn't give you that sense of, I mean, because you're in, and the other thing is, you're in like a claustrophobic, busy ass spaceship. It's not gonna trigger that atmosphere just yet. That's gonna be, you know, where we go next off the spaceship. It's gonna be hopefully where we see that atmosphere emerge. I just don't think that a demo like that is the right place for them to showcase the atmosphere of Metroid Prime.
What about the visor? Was that worked into the demo at all?
Yeah, Ryan O'Donnell scanned a bunch of stuff, but beyond that, it wasn't.
There's a lot of scanning.
I mean, I was just running around like an idiot shooting stuff.
Did they have the Big Brain Academy demo at the English one in New York?
Yeah, they did, actually. They had the Big Brain Academy game.
Did you play it?
Brian Crescenti from Kotaku and I squared off on that. And
is it fun?
Did you own him?
You're pretty smart.
Yeah, destroyed. Just destroyed. And that was cool. I could see it being fun, you know, going back and forth with a friend, you know, playing, you know,
for 10 minutes.
That.
For 10 minutes.
Same time, like, that's another game where I don't necessarily know why it would have to be on the Wii. Like, oh great, I'm pointing and moving blocks that don't add up to the number 13 out of this out of here. Cool. I you could do that with a controller. It's not necessarily, you know, using the functionality.
Well, there you have it on that. Kind of ended the Big Brain thing on a down note. Oh, that's okay. I mean, that's things that they have to sort out, and maybe Big Brain doesn't lend itself that well to it. What other games do we need to hit that we haven't hit? Well, you said you played all of the Play Suite. We talked about shooting. We talked about billiards. What else was in the Play Suite?
What about the new Zelda controls? There's some mix-up on that.
The new Zelda controls, they took some of the, like, because it was really cumbersome and awkward, and I remember when we talked about it at E3, it was just really fucking goofy to try and shoot the bow and arrow, and you could see it, like, you could see the frustration, like, curling on people's faces when they're trying to, like, shoot the bow and arrow with the elevated enemies, and, like, the guys doing the demo are like, no, just point it up there and shoot them, and people are like, motherfucker, I can't point it up there and shoot them. Leave me alone.
I had that experience.
And what they did basically was they remapped the controls to make it a little bit better, and I talked with a guy from the game, a guy who's been working on the game off the record about the changes, and not necessarily the why, but he had been saying that, like, for the last 2 months, all he's been doing is hold up in his office playing the Twilight Princess, and he said that it is going to be the longest and best Zelda to date, and that I can count on it.
Yeah, we've heard that,
so
from
some
several
good,
people,
like,
now.
Nintendo hype. The actual swords, like the sword swing and the nunchuck, move the nunchuck in a 360 motion to do that, the spin move that you see so much, that's cool. That's all right. And the shield slam was in, I believe, in the E3 demo. But I mean, it's fun, but I don't know that it's needed. Really, it doesn't seem like it's built for it. It doesn't seem like the game was built to accompany it. It seems like they were like, ooh, people are going to want Zelda. We should launch with this. If we move this to the Wii launch, then we can probably sell more units, and then we'll delay the other one, and the controller's going to be good. We'll remap everything, and it's still whatever. GameCube.
I guess it's time to let him bring this thing home for us. You spent the whole, you know, last day and a half messing around with Wii. You've heard the prices. You've heard everything. Bring it home with a, you know, like a sum up of everything you saw and what you think of the Wii and how it performed in this presentation.
If you're going to buy the Wii this year, I think that it's sort of like buying the PS3, in that with both consoles, you're paying for potential. The difference, besides $350,
which is a big difference,
Yeah, which is a big difference, which is another Wii, actually. The difference is, you know, pretty obvious in what you're getting between the two consoles if you're looking to adopt. I think that, like, looking in the grander scheme of things with the console war, this all plays very, very well for Microsoft, who now has the luxury of dropping their price to undercut, to, like, compete with Nintendo more. And that could be something that could be extremely interesting if Microsoft does. As far as, like, Nintendo's products and the Wii, I think that in a year, everyone will want one who doesn't have one. I just think that for me personally, the time to adopt isn't going to be now. It'll be, you know, it'll be when Mario Galaxy comes out. It'll be when it's time to get Super Smash Brothers. It'll be when Super Paper Mario comes to the Wii, if it does. I heard Bill Trennan say to someone, like, no, we haven't. I don't know where that came from. I don't know where that rumor that it's moving to the Wii came from. Huh. I also heard a different Nintendo executive say, yeah, we're already working on the next console. We're really looking forward to the next console. Once this one ships, the way we work is, you know, we finish one up and start working on the next one. So we're going to ship this one this year and get right back to work on the next
one. Do you still think that's normal?
Wii HD 2008.
I was just going to ask you, do you think Wii 2... 2 years?
Yeah, no. If it works well, I think that you would be, you know, I don't think anyone would be surprised, given the way Nintendo's handled the DS and the DS Lite. I don't think anyone would be surprised if in 2 years they're like, and now here's a new version of this with some increased and improved functionality.
Well, that's Luke summing it up for us live from New York. Can't beat that. It's almost like Saturday night, except it's not. Don't think that just because Luke's there, we don't have news for you coming back on the other side, because we've got plenty of news. John's been working on it. Skip's been working on it. I have a stack of news stuff, so we'll be back on the other side of the break with plenty of news for you.
Radio Network. If you know the name of the podcast you'd like to hear, press 1 now. You have selected Radio PM, starring the editors of the official U.S. PlayStation magazine. To download an episode at radiopm.oneup.com, press 1 now. To listen to a promo, press 2 now. In a world ripped apart by war, only one magazine.
Want more Extreme Tech? Well, now you can join the crew of expert analysts for our weekly podcast. They'll give you the lowdown on the latest technology news, product reviews, and let you know what's coming up. Just go to extremetech.com to subscribe.
You're listening to One Up Yours on the One Up Radio Network.
All right, and after all the Nintendo talk, it seems only right that we start off on the news segment with some Sony news. And Luke was digging around in financial news and got this connection between Sony and X-Fire, which has now been disputed as to what it's going to be. Shane, you've been one of the biggest supporters of Sony, so what do you think about this whole announcement? Well, where are they going?
It was a roller coaster ride, because originally Luke found that they were partnering to provide some sort of content for the, what's it even called now, Untold Legend?
Untold Legend.
It has a new name. I don't remember what it's called.
Oh, it does?
Yeah, it's like something Untold Legends. That game for PS3. And
Box Guy.
that one. So Luke did digging and, you know, came to this conclusion that Sony was going through X-Fire for their whole online matching service. And X-Fire, if you don't know what it is, it's kind of like Xbox Live, but free and for PC.
And well-established.
It actually started the
Untold Legends things was actually the thing that sealed it. We were looking through the .ini file for X-Fire, and Untold Legends is actually listed as supported in the application. Where the story, we'd heard some rumors that this was happening, and we went through Viacom's quarterly earning reports, and there was actually a statement in there that said that, because Viacom acquired X-Fire earlier this year, late last year, for like $102 million or something.
Which is a huge amount of money to pay for that.
Well, something that everyone was like, well, why did they do that? And it said, and it's just like two lines in the statement saying that, you know, they're very pleased about their relationship with Sony for the PS3.
Right.
It wasn't specific to a product. It wasn't specific to SOE. It just said with Sony on PS3. And this tied with the rumors that we'd heard previously. I think it was, who knows? I mean, we'll know for sure in a week at TGS.
And the thing is, it would be a really smart decision because it's this well-established, wonderful service that 5 million people already use that would instantly give them a great competitor to Xbox Live. But of course, everyone backpedaled and be like, oh, that's just for one small aspect of the game. It doesn't mean that we're have a broad-reaching partnership with Sony, blah, blah, blah. You know, wait until TGS. So yeah. I think when we see that, the big keynote at TGS.
It would be really smart if they did use something existing. It would give them, it wouldn't give them all the functionality of Xbox Live, but it would give the player matching, buddy list management, all the stuff that, you know, and they can spit it out as an XML feed so you can have gamer cards, all that stuff.
Right. By and I was also reading, apparently it has some functionality that's kind of like the Xbox Live Anywhere functionality.
It has a lot of that kind of
functionality. Yeah, so like that kind of would, like, even the
we
new
can
stuff
connect with
Microsoft's
people online
doing.
And see what people are playing and track what games
it wouldn't
been.
Make sense for them just to do one game.
That's the point that kills me.
And that game.
They're testing it with Untold Legend. And the other thing, I think the confusion is, this casts some light on the confusion over PNP. PNP is not Xbox Live. PNP is a strategy. Mm-hmm. It's what XNA used to be before they... I mean, XNA still doesn't exist as a product. It's a concept. Mm-hmm. And PNP is the same thing. I think it will be a lot like we saw on the PS2, where the online strategy for that was preferred middleware, things like GameSpy. I think that we'll see a suite of these things that people are using. Mm-hmm. And if you want the common functionality in your game, it's going to use this piece of software, and there's an extremely good chance that what we see is going to be based on Xfire.
Yeah,
and I hope so, because otherwise, if they're not pulling our leg, that just plays into the whole thing that people have argued, well, they're just going to fragment online, because if one game has one sort of community management system, and another one has another sort of community management system.
Within Sony themselves.
It's going to be fragmented anyway, because anything beyond player matching, anything where you need to pay for content and the microtransaction stuff, you're going to be giving your credit card details to a bunch of different people. Mm-hmm. I think that's the one major complaint about the strategy that people are really starting to come out and criticize is, okay, if I want to download content for GT, I'm paying Sony, but if I'm downloading content for Test Drive,
I'm open to being proven otherwise, but I still think I like the Live model.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying that. But whatever we're playing, we're going to be playing it with the six axis.
That's
the
true.
Six axis.
They can't very well call it the DualShock anymore.
It doesn't shock.
So,
it's a palindrome.
It's a palindrome. It's cool.
I'm just going to go ahead and call it the controller.
Six-axis.
The PS3 controller.
You don't like the six-axis? It's like the dawning of the age of the six-axis.
666.
So this is it is what the controller is called.
Yeah.
You look on test, the trademark search thing. It's there with the logo. And six-axis is actually how they've been referring to it descriptively in statements. In fact, we found a press release that I think said six-axis as a hyphenated expression, I think, three times. So, but I've been trying to work out what the six axes are. Because it doesn't support sort of in and out.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's up and down, left and right.
There's X, Y.
Twisting around.
And I guess, which is a little ambiguous, because it won't do what the Wii will do.
Right.
There's none of that sort of reaching in the control that you can do.
Exactly.
So I think it might be sort of them referring to tilting, maybe.
Yeah.
Unless they surprise us this week. Who knows? It's not without precedent that they bust something out last minute with a controller.
They are going to bust something out at TGS. There's really no place to talk about TGS. I'll just throw this in here. Apparently, there's some big, big secret PS3 games that no one knows about that are going to be at TGS.
Awesome.
That are important.
Good. They really need that kind of PR hitting it right now.
Yeah.
That is a potential Barry Bonds one into the water.
Might be a megaton or two out there. You never know.
Definitely would be fantastic. I don't know if it's going to be a megaton.
Erupt.
Might be a megaton.
I don't know whether this even amounts to a megaton anymore, but what about this PSP bundle strategy
that's not a megaton.
Yeah.
Well, it's a mega dumb.
Really?
Well, are we talking about the bundle with, like, the Lords of Dogtown and that thing?
Right. So the strategy going into Christmas.
To make PSP more expensive. That's a great strategy.
Yeah. with a movie that's... why that one?
They probably had a lot of copies laying around. It's a Sony's Pictures film.
Maybe they're feeling threatened with the iPods.
I'd hope so after this week. We'll talk about that in a minute. But I think the thing with the PSP problem right now is... they're still dicking around with memory stick pricing. I don't know if you see the movie pack that they started doing?
Very weird.
It's a memory stick with a free download. It doesn't give you the Sony download management software. It's like a stripped down version of it. So you get to go and choose a free movie, and it can be SWAT or some other shit. I don't know what it is. It's like three movies.
Stealth, I think.
Stealth
maybe
is one of them.
But awesome.
The pack is like $60. SanDisk is selling a 1 gig stick for $29 now, which means you're paying over the odds for a download movie when you buy the Sony one. I mean, what the hell are they doing?
Wow.
That question keeps coming up with regard to Sony, doesn't
it? Well, because UMD Video is kind of a flop, although despite the fact they're packing one in now, they do want people to start putting video on memory sticks.
Right.
For the next generation.
Let's charge ridiculous amounts of money for it.
Yeah, you know, people get upset because we're so dismissive of PSP, but it's tough these days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they have to prove otherwise with the game software to make the whole rest of the package work. It's a game player.
There are some games. Like apparently, there's a Parappa remake at TGS. I'm excited about that.
I'm looking forward to PSP at TGS.
And actually,
they have something.
They do something. And I just caught wind. Square has something unexpected.
Wow.
So
good. More TGS stuff to look
forward
to.
More TGS stuff.
Next week's podcast could be all right.
That could be okay. Both you and Shane are going to be in Japan. We're going to be.
You guys are going to call in, right?
Yeah. We are definitely going to call in. We're going to be like sorting that out.
It's going to be like 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. here in San Francisco, and it's going to be like
we'll all be drunk.
God
anyway.
Knows when
Don't
in
worry.
Japan. It's going to be awesome. We're all going to be drunk and delirious. Yeah. It's going to be great.
Yeah, we'll have laptops and Skype, and we'll get that all sorted out. We'll be on the tip.
Let's talk about the iPod thing very briefly, because I thought it was interesting this week that we had two press conferences from people with like fervent followings. And in a lot of ways, I think the response to both Apple just doing anything and Nintendo doing anything gets the same kind of rabid response.
It's funny, I was mentioning before the show that Microsoft actually had a press conference between those two for the Zune, and no one noticed.
Did anyone even know? They showed
the final Zunes, they showed everything, and no one noticed.
Zune is actually going to be at retail in November, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah.
30 gig.
But not only, that anyone appears to be paying attention.
About the crappy games on iPods.
I know. It's such a sort of throwaway thing for them. I think they're doing it because they can.
Yeah.
They're kind of expensive for what they are.
Yeah, and I've heard some of them are good, some of them are bad. That's what I've heard.
All right, tune me in. I actually haven't read the news story.
There's 9 games.
Tetris.
Yeah, they're like $5-6 each.
Tetris, Zuma, Bejeweled. Bejeweled, Texas Hold'em.
Yeah. Cell phone games.
And they're massive downloads. I mean, comparatively, like...
They're like Xbox Live Arcade games,
yeah,
right?
Tetris is like a 15 meg download or something. And like, there's like Pac-Man or something. He's massive. It's like 9 meg. Well, I mean, like the original Tetris was 16K.
Well, we finally figured it out. We've been complaining about this for weeks, and John figured it out. It's because they're having to make like wave files of the audio or something. Yeah. Instead of beeps and boops, which were like a
there was
chip.
Some guy on one of the Apple blogs or forums or something went to, like, downloaded one and actually worked out that you're downloading a renamed zip file. And when you open it up, it's full of like these huge audio files and stuff.
You think you'd be able to have your own custom soundtracks on the iPod?
Well, what you can do is you can actually change this file, and you can drop AAC files and JPEGs into it so that when you look in the browser, it'll replace all the graphics and stuff. But I mean, it's such a... It's more because we can. It's definitely not Apple taking on the Game Boy. It's just, let's give you something else to do apart from play Breakout.
Yeah, but that's the casual market that we were talking about with Wii, too, isn't it? Doesn't that compete somewhat?
Isn't it competing with cell phones now?
It is, definitely.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Rumored iPod cell phone.
That's apparently coming in January. It's ready. Yeah. I think a lot of people were like, iPod and gaming, and it's Apple getting... No, they're not. They're just extending functionality.
Shane, I know you wanted to get into, while we're talking about portable games, you wanted to get into Final Fantasy XII, potentially, for the DS?
Well, it's not potentially. It's announced. It's called Final Fantasy XII Revenant Wing, and it's a sequel of sorts. It follows the end of Final Fantasy XII, and no one's really sure, but I hear it's a strategy, kind of a tactic-style game. I just wanted to pull this out, because EGM, in the last issue in the Rumor Mill, talked about a Final Fantasy XIII strategy game for DS, and this is what we were talking about, where our wires were a little crossed. You know, we were going through Square's trash can.
You were two-thirds correct.
But yeah, we were pretty close.
That is pretty close.
So people are speculating that maybe there is also a 13 game. Well, maybe there is, but this is what we were talking about.
On the Microsoft front, we're not without some information there. We had information, you know, that Luke was really high on about the Halogen real-time strategy game. It's been canceled, and there's been speculation about what might be
behind
that.
Did you watch the video that Mark put up on Game Videos?
I think I'm going to do that.
The thing they were working on looked awesome.
They've been working on it for a long time, haven't they?
It was, three years. It was a mod for Command & Conquer Generals, which looked pretty nice to start with, but using all the Halo vehicles and units, and it looked really spectacular.
Well, when I was coming up here, Sean Elliott stopped and talked to me about this, and he said that the reason it was canceled is because Microsoft hired them to make a real one, so it's not really bad news.
The rumor is that one of the things that's going to hit at XO6 might be, you know, Halo brand extension things. So I think the obvious assumption to make is maybe an RTS.
See, now what's your thought about a Halo RTS? My thought is that could actually swing against them somewhat. Originally, Halo was going to be a PC RTS, and people were excited
about
that.
And they made the Myth games. Those were fairly well received.
Yeah.
Not only fairly well received, they were on the cutting edge of making 3D real-time strategy games, and they were really cool. And so if you can't equal that kind of impact, like one of the things I heard was, okay, maybe Ensemble would be the team making a Halo game. I think that would be a horrible disaster.
Well, I think they are, so you'll see that in 2 weeks.
I think if they go that route, that's potentially a horrible disaster. Bruce Shelley does great job.
Wasn't Age of Empires 3 a good game?
It was a good game, and their style of RTS is fantastic for what it does in the historical context, in the kind of people who want to play that
game. But it's different from Halo.
It's totally different from Halo, and it's totally different from where Myth went. And it's not going to have that purchase in the Halo world. It's like when Star Wars co-opted the Age of Empires engine and did, what was, remember that?
Oh, that wasn't good.
Oh,
there were several bad Star Wars RTS. Force Commander or something.
Right, and I could so see a Halo RTS
But I do think that if they did it as a Games for Windows title, that it would be a way to let the Halo brand exist in two places. And because Microsoft's strategy with Xbox and Games for Windows moving forward is going to be them complementing each other.
Right.
Rather than competing with themselves, it's like, okay, we need to roll out IP, and you put, you know, the Halo proper on 360, and then to have a support game that's suited for a PC experience, that could be a really smart thing. If they are doing an RTS, I really hope it's not going to lead on 360, because I'm still not buying the RTS on console thing.
So now we are hearing that, you know, there's Halo 3, Halo RTS, and Halo MMO. And we're not sure if Forerunners is the RTS or the MMO. I guess we'll find out in 2 weeks.
So speaking of that, and we didn't have it on our list, but did you notice that Chris Taylor actually commented about the potential for Supreme Commander on 360?
I think everyone's looking at Battle for Middle-Earth 2, which was apparently a sales disaster. Really? Like, no one bought it on 360.
It did okay. It did, like, 75,000 or something, I think, first month. Not bad. That's three times what, like, Rumble Roses sold.
Well, the excitement over how well it worked certainly quieted down pretty quickly.
I think once the novelty of, hey, that's different, wore off, everyone was like, yeah, it still kind of sucks, though, huh?
that silenced everyone.
So you don't think that rethought way of controlling RTSs on 360 is going to be picked up in the future?
Like, I think it still needs some
tweaking,
some rethinking.
Okay. I'm sure that they'll be putting a lot of effort into it over at EA with the Command & Conquer development.
Yeah.
Bethesda not going to do an expansion for Oblivion? Come on.
There's some confusion here.
Because I've heard that the PS3...
Knights of the White Stallion was actually the name of something in Oblivion, I believe.
Okay.
So I'm not sure why that name got picked up as... There was talk a long time ago that there was going to be an expansion at the end of this year. But I'm starting to think that maybe they're just going to keep adding quests as downloadable content. Why do a package thing?
I don't know. Why do a package thing? How big a package? That's a good question. How big of a downloadable content package can you ultimately
sell? Part of it is if they can keep charging you $5, $6, $7 a pop for, the Wizard's Tower or whatever, versus at some point bundling everything up together on a disc and saying, here it is for X amount of dollars, I'm assuming 20, 30?
Well, and we're getting so close to PS3, and they still haven't shown the PS3 version, which is apparently a launch title, and like I think everyone's curious, what does it have that's different, if anything?
Yeah.
You know? Who knows?
You actually, I should have pulled this on and put it up on the top, is about the Halo movie, and Peter Jackson talking about it over on Ain't It Cool News. And really, he doesn't really give us a whole lot of new information. He brings up this point that one of the things that was really important to them was having someone who was a real Halo fan, you know, heading up the project. Is that the kind of brand extension that would work with what you were talking about?
Maybe. I was thinking more in terms of games. But, you know, I mean, Halo is a mega franchise, and Microsoft doesn't really have many mega franchises. I mean, I think, you know, Viva Pinata is an attempt to build an IP rather than a game. Halo is an IP. They just haven't done anything with it apart from a game.
The Halo spinoffs are brilliant. I mean, it's what they need to be doing. Yeah. There's a reason Nintendo makes 20 Mario games a year.
They're building a universe. It's books, it's toys, the novels, the graphic novel, the movie. And I think a logical thing is different types of games filling in the storyline. I just hope that they temper it a little bit, and that we don't get into a point where it's like, oh, like this year there's going to be the cell phone game and the handheld game and the little downloady crappy thing for Zune and
Halo Party,
and you know, just don't dilute it.
Makes sense to me. We talked earlier in the What You've Been Playing segment about Test Drive Unlimited and where we are with that now. We need to get into this patch situation, though, because obviously that's going to be a linchpin for us, right? It's still not out. The big patch still isn't out.
And the little patch didn't really help.
Yeah, so
I mean, it helped a little bit, but it only helped with the specific problems that were really bugging people. I think just in the things that you would notice in the first hour of playing, but there are some deep-seated problems with that game.
Yeah, very much so, because the community part just doesn't work.
I think the part that makes the game unique is gone.
So how long do we really think that how long does this game have to survive before the lack of a patch puts
until
it aside?
Until the next 360 game comes out. Because that's the way it's working
very
right
mouth.
Now. Right now, people are going game to game, and it's like, you know, whatever's new is capturing people's attention, and as soon as something, you know, everything's...
When's the last time you played Prey?
Oh, right.
It's that.
When's the last time you stepped out of a vagina?
God. All right, then. How about this?
I stopped playing Saints Row because of Test Drive and Lego Star Wars, and I sort of erred more towards Test Drive, and, you know, like I said earlier, I'm kind of bored of it already. I am ready for the next 360 game.
What would it take to bring you back to Test Drive? Because they have vehicles coming up. You know, they have, like, the Skyline going to be downloadable. What would it take to bring you back to it?
I think it's going to take you, if you're still playing it, saying, hey, you should come and check this out. They'd really change something.
How about games that don't get patches that people wanted, like Dead Rising? This is kind of strange because there was really a lot of expectation that since the issue was being addressed officially, that there was going to be something that came out of it. But we waited and we waited, and you know, Patrick Klepek here had the scoop here. The Capcom said Dead Rising was optimized for HD, and we offered some suggestions for SD TV owners.
Like, buy an HD TV.
Yeah, buy an HD TV or squint. Yeah.
I think they decided to spend their budget on doubling the marketing instead of making a patch.
Yeah. So the answer from the company was that due to the amount of text and the size of the patch necessary to change the text, a patch isn't possible for this issue.
That sounds like bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. So what does that say then, maybe, for like Lost Planet?
Size because equals whatever it is now.
We have the full game of Lost Planet. Mark's played through. You could ask him.
All right. So we should check into that, because I would imagine that there's a lot of sharing going on between resources. I mean, that's basically the Capcom 360 engine. Yeah. And in HD, it looks awesome.
The thing about Capcom for me is that I love their games. They make awesome games. But they are absolutely terrible at interfaces and text and just basic menu stuff.
It's very unfriendly.
Like, it's totally unfriendly. Did you play Resident Evil Outbreak?
Oh my God.
It's like,
Capcom, don't ever bring that up again.
Capcom and online games, they don't know how to do it. Like, they don't know how to make an interface that works, that's friendly, that's logical.
So non-intuitive and just clumsy.
It's like this. Like, make your text bigger.
I like the save system. It's like, it's not hard to make a functional save system in a game either.
We definitely don't need to go back to
it. Great games, let us play them the way we want to play them.
So apparently a lot of people were playing Call of Duty 2 because Activision has gotten on the soapbox and announced that they are the first 1 million selling 360 title.
Congratulations.
Is anyone surprised that is the 1 million?
I bet the Rare people are sad.
Yeah, but I don't think anyone's surprised.
No, it was by far the best selling game.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think the surprise is how long it took.
Nearly a year.
I know. Yeah. I mean, that's definitely one of those games that when you go in to buy a 360 is at the top of your list of, hey, I probably ought to get this game. Yeah. So why did it take so long for him to reach 1 million?
Well, not selling them, you know, they're not selling a tremendous amount of units each month.
Before we get out of here on news, I've saved this bigger topic of discussion as kind of like a last hurrah for the podcast today. Has PC gaming become niche, which is a postulation that Patrick Klepek put out there? This started from a Webbush Morgan report where it said the PC games market is becoming a niche, substantial in size, but a niche nonetheless. And ultimately, I think that the PC games market stays about the same size while console and handheld game sales grow by about 50%. Responses to that, of course, immediately came from Mark Rain and Chris Taylor.
And anyone with any affinity to PC. This is Michael Pachter again, being combative with something Microsoft oriented, and a lot of it's just the language he's using. I mean, like, you know, the way he describes PC as a niche describes pretty much any area of gaming, of course, you know.
Well, it's funny because if I think of PC gaming, I do tend to think of like the enthusiast stuff, like FPSs and RTSs. But when you think of the best-selling PC games of all time,
in his report,
it's The Sims, it's Tetris, right.
He actually doesn't. He mentions MMOs, RPGs, and RTS games specifically, and ignores first-person shooters completely, which, for a start, is pretty odd. They talked about this on the CGW podcast this week, last week. I mean, very recently when this report hit. And it's like, there's a big, the stuff that does sell really well. I mean, Half-Life 2 sold pretty well.
Yeah.
You know, and...
Or something like Spore. I mean, Spore goes against his thinking right there, you know?
And again, I think this ties in a little bit with the conversation we had about the Wii. And the PC is more than just these individual games. It is something that a lot of people have access to. And the PC market needs to change so that things are actually tailored towards those devices.
Like, the leading edge PC games are niche titles.
Yeah.
The ones where you have to buy a new graphics card, that is a niche title.
But games that will run on a $600 Dell laptop, I think, are going to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And those $600 Dell laptops are going to start getting better.
Yep. But what happened? I mean, that's the, kind of the question is, how much of this is hardware dependent and how much of the problem is because of the hardware?
I think ATI and AMD merging is a really important thing, because I think we're going to start seeing, like, basic on the motherboard graphics and processor solutions that are being more suited to games from those guys. And I think they're going to make inroads in the laptop market, which is where all the growth is, right? Everyone wants a laptop. People, you know, anyone that's not a gamer.
Yeah, I mean, when we're seeing cell phones with embedded 3D, it's like, wow, okay, now we're moving towards, you know, smaller, good PC devices.
And hopefully Vista will help with that. I mean, one of the things that Mark told Games for Windows when he was interviewed was that, hey, you know, the bottom line is that the majority of consumers unknowingly buy computers that suck for playing decent games. That's not going to be true with Vista because of the baseline requirements to run the operating system, which people have complained about, but at the same time, it might be a
boom. It's going to elevate everything to a level. They need
a standard. They need a standard,
So PC gaming's not really going to go away.
And I think when DirectX 10 ships with Vista as a standard for game development and in standards for hardware, I mean, that's really significant.
Yeah, I mean, and you look at our message boards and how often people come and ask us, hey, could you guys on One Up Yours talk about PC games a little more? Which, by the way, we will. Mm-hmm. But, that right there is a clear signal. Yes, there's an audience and there's a lot of enthusiasts for that. But next week won't be when we're talking about PC games.
No, we'll be pretty preoccupied.
Tokyo Game Show.
We'll have plenty of TGS. Shane and I will be there.
Skip and I will be holding down the fort in the middle of the night.
Luke here, too.
Luke's going to be here.
So I can't wait for it. I really can't wait.
It's
hopefully
gonna be insane.
You guys call in, blog like crazy when you can.
Yeah. We will. I'm. You know, so this is like my first time out of the country other than Mexico.
I want bizarre photos.
Dude, I am so amped.
Do you mean to show you around?
Yes.
All right.
I told you last night, stick with Shane and
Mark. This is my 11th trip to Tokyo.
Dude, I stepped onto the clouds like yesterday night when I finally started thinking about TGS with Skip. And
yeah, when the reality sets in, it's going to be pretty awesome.
I won't be coming down. I'll be like, oh my God, this is, I'm not going home. I'm just staying there.
You're going to have a good time.
So, and definitely our message boards, we need to get probably a thread going.
I'll get a thread going.
We get a thread going where people can come in and give us, you know, what they want us to look at, what they want us to talk about, things they want us to check out. Anyway, we'll be watching that at boards.oneup.com, and we'll be coming to you from Japan and San Francisco next week on the show. Till then, we're out.
This has been One Up Yours, a production of the Ziff Davis Game Group and part of the One Up Radio Network. One Up Yours is hosted by Grant Lee and John Davison, produced by Andrew Fister and Mike Ng, and is published every Friday afternoon at podcast.oneup.com and at the iTunes Music Store.
What's up? I'm not in the fucking credits.